Tarantella from the second suite for two pianos, Opus 17, by Rachmaninoff. It was played by Martin Roscoe and Peter Donohoe. This is BBC Radio 3. The time is just after 2 o'clock. Time now for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
In this week's Early Music Show, we take a look at what's become not only the best-known choral renaissance ensemble in the world, but one of the UK's greatest cultural exports. This month, the Tallis Scholars celebrate their 40th anniversary, and later I'll be joined in the studio by their founder and director, Peter Phillips, who'll be talking about the group's early days and about the iconic sound world of the Tallis Scholars. In the 1970s, it was groundbreaking enough, but over the decades, it's become the benchmark for all vocal groups specialising in repertoire from the 15th and 16th centuries. Let's hear that sound now. Here are the Tallis Scholars, directed by Peter Phillips, in their latest recording of music by the 16th century English composer John Taverner. music from the first half of the 16th century performed by the Tallis scholars, John Taverner's Missa Gloria Tibi Trinitas. That was the Sanctus and Benedictus. You're listening to the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and later in the programme I'm going to be giving you details of this year's National Centre for Early Music Composers competition, held in collaboration with the Tallis Scholars. It's their 40th anniversary this year, so do keep a pen and paper handy if that floats your particular boat. Earlier I spoke to their director and founder, Peter Phillips, who as a 20-year-old undergraduate at Oxford University in the 1970s, decided to gather a group of friends together and put on a concert of Renaissance polyphony. Of course, this is hardly unusual these days in musical student communities, but back then, the early music revival was still in its infancy.
I very much doubt the first concert was any good at all. I do have a memory of it. There were very few people in the audience, which was one of the reasons why no one did whole concerts of polyphony in those days. It was thought that no one would come and listen to them. The singers were very experienced young singers from Christchurch and around, and could sight-read almost anything, as they still can, of course. I mean, that's the English way. We did an Ockeghem Mass, or tried to do an Ockeghem Mass. We didn't do all of it in the end. They couldn't sight-read it. It was too difficult. It was a style they didn't know. And so we were already, right from the start, right from the word go, we were up against it and having to sort of learn new things and extend what we could already do very fluently to something that was just beyond our reach. In 1973, the choral early music scene was dominated by a few groups, and the range of style available in performance in those days was much wider than it is now. There were groups like Cantores and Ecclesia and the Renaissance Singers, Schola Polifonica, groups that aren't known now really, but they sang in a way which no one would tolerate now. Big operatic voices singing these lines of polyphony very, very slowly, actually, in order to sort of maximise the emotional impact. The antidote was the Clerks of Oxenford and the collegiate choirs like King's, and actually Magdalen in those days under Bernard Rose. And those are the people I listened to with fascination and learnt a lot very quickly about how this music could be done. The next concert included Tallis's Speminalium, which is obviously a great ask all round, not least to get the copies in those days, because that was really difficult to find enough copies. And they were heavy and large, and we'd had the naivety of youth, the energy of youth. We're going to do Spem, you know. We booked the church, which in this case was the university church, and the public actually was quite interested in this. Even then, the 40-part motet was such a rarity and so famous that people turned up, and the church was locked when we arrived for the concert. There were hundreds of people standing around the church. Oh, dear. We actually had to go into dinner at Queen's, where the vicar of the church was having dinner, and we had to get him out of his dinner and unlock it with the key that he had with him. And it started late, and people, you know, the audience sort of melted away, and all the money we could have had, we didn't have. Our recording of Spem, which was made in December 1984, must be the oldest in the current catalogue. I mean, there were older ones, but I think this must be the longest surviving one in the current catalogue. And it is still, I can tell you, the best-selling version. How that's happened is delightful to say, because I think as early as that, we got certain basic things right about how to record polyphony. My colleagues at Gimmel, Steve Smith, decided very early on just to put one stereo pair mic, just one, none of these mixing desks and mics everywhere and all the rest of it. It was just, he'd find what he called the sweet spot in the building, which was Merton College Chapel. And just, even for Spem, he just put up this one mic. And that has been the secret of how to make the Tallis Scholars sound on disc anyway. And I am amazed by how durable that sound has been.
Sperminalium, the famous 40-part motet by Thomas Tallis, performed on that 1984 recording by somewhat enlarged Tallis scholars, conducted by Peter Phillips. That recording is typical of the polished purity we'd expect from them that's enjoyed by millions throughout the world. Right from the start, Peter Phillips never had any doubts in his mind about what he wanted from the group.
I had an ideal sound lodged in my head that I was forever trying to capture. This took rather a long time because I couldn't sing it. I couldn't show them what to do, and the singers weren't used to it in those days. We really were blazing a trail in every way, the singers, the public, the repertoire. It wasn't normal. But I was determined to get this sound, and I persevered. And I would have thought by 1987 we were hitting it most of the time, and certainly on record, because you can stop and start again if you haven't got it. It's clear, obviously. It's strong, but on the outside it's gossamer light. It's very seductive, agile, and it's based in good tuning and good blends between the 10 voices that I customarily use. A good example of it is our recording of Shepherd's Mediavita, which is a huge piece, actually. It lasts 25 minutes. But the opening is particularly magical. The strength in the sound is shown by how you sing very long phrases legato. You've got someone singing with you, so you can, what we call, stagger the breathing, but you mustn't let the line go. So it's going to be long, long legato lines that never give up. They're always coming at you. And then all the lines together produce this, what I call, gossamer lightness on the top of it, a sort of a beauty in itself, a beautiful sound that people won't say, oh, I don't like that, and go away and not listen to the music, because under the sound is this great, great music by Shepherd. This is a really remarkable piece.
Thank you.
In the midst of life, we are in death, part of John Shepherd's Media Vita, an example of the kind of pure vocal sound that Peter Phillips had in mind for the Tallis Scholars right from the start. It's a sound world that's not always been accepted by critics. Here's Peter Phillips again.
We've been criticised for the way we do the music all along. It was at its worst in the early days because critics expected everything to come over with an operatic throb. I remember one French critic saying it was monotone et ennuyeux, monotonous and boring. That was the entire concert was written off with those words. Other people have said it's not sexy, it's too cold. But actually, as the years have gone by and the sound has become part of the sort of listening fabric, it stopped. So they've got used to the sound that I had right from the start. I've always thought that that cool surface, which I really like, hides a tremendous emotional charge underneath it. And once you notice that, well, then you're hooked.
Onata Lux by Thomas Tallis, performed by the Tallis Scholars. The group had been going for more than 10 years before digital recording techniques emerged in the 1980s and the advent of CDs, and it could have been designed for a singing style such as theirs. Peter Phillips, by this stage, had already set up his own recording company, Gimmel Records.
Gimmel Records was set up in 1980 because nobody wanted Renaissance music. The majors, as they're called, or were called, the big record companies didn't want what we were offering and they'd never heard of us. So it wasn't a great start. In fact, we'd done a bit better than that. The original Allegri recording that was made in 1980 was made for EMI. It was on a label called Classics for Pleasure, which sold for 49p, a black vinyl copy. And we sold tens of thousands of these, and EMI were very pleased with us. And they invited us to do a second disc, which flopped absolutely because there's nothing like the Allegri in the repertory, especially for people who don't know anything about it. And they wanted very quick sales. They just weren't prepared to make over the warehouse space to something that was going to sit around for 10 years. Well, it sold very nicely, but slowly. They just couldn't deal with that. So they lost interest in us almost immediately. We thought that was it. You know, we'd kind of have to set up our own label. So we did, and we were, as it turns out, sort of 25 to 30 years ahead of the game in doing so. Now everyone's doing it. The disc didn't sell very well, of course, and there was no distribution system for them that was as effective as what the majors had, and so on and so on. But we struggled on, and we got to the end of the 80s, and then we won this Gramophone Record of the Year award in 87, And suddenly we had a real business on our hands.
Thank you.
We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Tallis Scholars on the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I've been talking to the group's director and founder, Peter Phillips. The recording of Josquin's Mass Panja Lingua we've just heard won the Tallis Scholars a gramophone award and now brought them into the international arena. Nowadays, touring around the world is a major part of their lives, and when I spoke to Peter Phillips, he and the group had just returned from the Antipodes, one of the many trips that have marked this anniversary year.
One of the interesting things about the history of the Tallis Scholars is that of the nearly 2,000 concerts we've now given, two-thirds of them have been outside the UK. Not many groups can claim that kind of number. These days, people come to hear the Tallis Scholars first. Up to a point, it doesn't matter what we sing. This is really a very great privilege to have that sort of carte blanche that if I want to do an obscure composer, I think I'll get an audience for it. More or less anywhere in the world now. So I'm at liberty to explore these Flemish composers who no one's heard of, like Mouton. We made a record of him recently. But there's a limit. Even a Josquin Mass tour doesn't sell as well as a Bird Mass tour or an Allegri Miserere tour. But it gets easier as the years go by. I mean, originally, I came up with really esoteric programmes because I thought that's was exciting to challenge everybody, so nobody came. And then I cottoned on to if we did a Bird Mass, we'd have a larger audience, but then we could probably do other things that they hadn't heard of. And so it built up.
Salve Nos Domine by Jean Mouton, performed there by the Tallis Scholars, directed by Peter Phillips. The Tallis Scholars are renowned for performing music from the Renaissance period, but contemporary composers have also written for them, attracted to that very pure tone we've been hearing, and which, of course, they have cultivated. The late Sir John Taverner was a great fan. And more recently, the American composer Eric Whitaker has written a piece for their anniversary, which was premiered a few months ago. What's more, for the past few years, Peter Phillips and the Early Music Show here on Radio 3 have collaborated to hold a competition for young composers. And today we're launching this year's. I'll be giving you more details in a moment. But first, Peter explains a little more about it.
the real deal is that the winners get a broadcast on Radio 3, so their music is broadcast, their names are up in lights. From the Talis Scholars, they get quite a lot of sort of kudos. They can write in their own styles, and the most successful ones have been original compositions, but written for us. I mean, understanding what makes the Talis Scholars tick. It is an instrument. It's like playing an instrument, and they can write for it, you know. And when we started, we didn't have very many offers, but it's gone up every year, I would say. And, for example, Alexander Kempkin won the last time we did it, or the time before last. Now, he's a very well-established composer now.
Peter Phillips talking about the National Centre for Early Music Young Composers competition. And Radio 3 is delighted to be joining forces with the Talis Scholars and the NCEM once again for their annual Composers Award. This major national competition is open to young composers resident in the UK, and it's in two age categories, 18 years and under, and 19 to 25-year-olds. Composers are invited to write a new 3 to 4 minute work for a cappella, that is, unaccompanied choir, specifically with the Talis Scholars in mind, and scored for sopranos 1 and 2, alto, tenor and bass. This year, the focus is on the Lamentations. So compositions must set verses from the Book of Jeremiah, a biblical text which mourns the destruction of the city of Jerusalem in about 600 BC. It's a text that's inspired many composers, from Talis to Palestrina and Gesualdo, and even Stravinsky. They all set the text in Latin, but settings of an English translation or even a combination of Latin and English are fine. The two winning works will be premiered in a concert given by the Talis Scholars on Friday the 24th of October 2014 at the Church of St John the Evangelist in Oxford, part of the Music at Oxford International Concert Season, and it'll be recorded for broadcast on this very programme. Applicants must register their interest in the award by emailing the National Centre for Early Music at education@ncem.co.uk by Friday the 21st of February. Completed scores must be delivered to the National Centre for Early Music by Friday the 21st of March. The award will be judged in York on the 8th of May, when a short list of entries will be rehearsed by the York-based Ebor Singers in a workshop led by the composer Christopher Fox at the National Centre for Early Music. At 7:30 p.m. on that same day, the Ebor Singers will perform each of the pieces in front of a panel of judges in a public concert, after which the two winners will be announced, one for each of the two age categories. Well, for full details, terms and conditions and application forms, visit the NCEM website at www.ncem.co.uk/Composers Award 2014. Come on, all you budding composers, or even people who haven't had a go at it before, get your manuscripts and your quills at the ready. Or is it an ink-free process these days? Who knows? Well, for the final music in today's Early Music Show, we're going to return to what the Talis Scholars is best known for, Renaissance polyphony. Here's Peter Phillips again.
Every time I think we've made it, I realise very quickly that we haven't really made it. Not to rival a symphony orchestra or a diva. And I don't see why we shouldn't rival those people. We have music just as good, we perform it just as well, and yet tradition is stacked against us still. I've been trying to break this down all my career, and we've got somewhere with it, but there's a long way to go.
Thank you.
The Lamentations for Holy Saturday by Palestrina. The Tallis Scholars were directed by Peter Phillips, who was Lucy Skeeping's guest in the early music show. The producer was Helen Garrison. This is BBC Radio 3. The time is coming up to 3 o'clock. In an hour's time, we've the choir, and in a change to the advertised edition, Greg Beardsall marks the death of Sir John Taverner with a poignant world premiere from a concert given on Friday night by the South Iceland Chamber Choir at Southwark Cathedral. There's also music by John Taverner in Choral Evensong Now. This service was first broadcast last Wednesday, live from Christchurch Cathedral, Oxford. The Magnificat by Walter Lamb dates from the late 15th century and comes from the Eton Choir Book. And the anthem is Valiant for Truth, the setting by Vaughan Williams of words from John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. John Taverner composed the Nunc Dimittis as part of his Orthodox vigil service for the choir of Christchurch in 1984. And the introit is John Taverner's settings of words by William Blake, The Lamb.
Welcome to Evensong at Christchurch. We're a college chapel as well as the Mother Church of England's largest diocese, and our students are halfway through Michaelmas term, reckoned by many to be the most challenging point of the academic year. We've gathered in the cathedral for remembrance. We're here to remember before God and commend to his keeping those who have died for their country in war, any we knew ourselves whose memory we treasure, all who have lived and died in the service of humanity. And we pray that the world may find peace and reconciliation. So our worship continues with the hymn, Judge Eternal, Throned in Splendor. Sings the psalms appointed for the 13th evening of the month, Psalms number 69 and 70.